capitalism concerning the reciprocity of various social spheres and determination by the economy only in the last instance. This is the area where Horkheimer made his first original contribution to Marxist theory, an area that brought him close to the independent contemporary researches of Antonio Gramsci. The major historical link between the two men was the necessity to interpret fascism from a Marxian point of view. According to Horkheimer, direct and violent translation of economic domination to political power, domination in Gramsci, is only one and not the best source of the stability of a mode of production. To be genuinely effective, power must be translated into authority based on explicit, implicit, or introjected consent that is mediated by cultural institutions, family, school, religion, workplace, and so on. To use Max Weber's language, power must become legitimate domination, for Gramsci, hegemony. The actual dynamics of society, the rate of social change, cannot therefore be derived from the economy alone, but depends rather on the specificity of cultural institutions and even specific effects of these on personality structure. Here Horkheimer, in contradistinction to the major representatives of the first phase of critical Marxism, calls on Freud's theory of internalization for help. He stresses, however, that the spheres of culture and personality structure do not determine the direction and the ultimate meaning of change in the last instance. If the erosion of the bourgeoisie family and of bourgeoisie culture, both of which Horkheimer felt protective of under the circumstances in the process of rationalization, Weber, undermines the ideological integration of capitalism, this can only accelerate a verdict that the contradiction of forces in relation of production has already pronounced on the existing system. And if other cultural processes, such as the reification of consciousness, interfere with the formation of revolutionary subjectivity, the same verdict is merely retarded. On this last point, rejoins Lukács to a far greater extent than his interpreters realize. What we have here is Lukács' concept of ideological crises inflated to a general historical category, linking consciousness and social change. More specifically, when speaking of his own time, Horkheimer uses implicitly the same notion of ideological crisis when he indicates his general alliance to the proletariat, but his inability to take theoretical guidance from its empirical consciousness. Page 8. Lukács, in 1923, was certainly not consistent on this point, but his best known, though not theoretically the best, position was identical to what Horkheimer, and as we will see, even Adorno, was to adopt. With one crucial difference, Horkheimer in 1937 refused to recognize any existing party as the representative of class consciousness. Also, in a theoretically Leninist manner, he does refer to the possibility of historically true consciousness being the possession of a relatively small group. On the issue of authority, Horkheimer's position was even more clearly Leninist, and here an attitude still sympathetic to the Soviet Union must be assumed. Therefore, the magnitude of his shift in political theory in the period of 1937 through 40 cannot be minimized. Footnote 9, text. According to Horkheimer, 1937, not all authority is regressive. Our technical domination of nature is always progressive. Only utilization of its methods vis-à-vis other men is dangerous. Footnote 10, text. Even in this last point, Horkheimer was rather inconsistent. Just a year earlier, footnote 11, text, criticizing anarchism, he indicated that authority which increases production is also progressive. In particular, he mentions the hierarchical position of experts and managers in industry vis-à-vis labor, as well as the necessarily authoritarian dimension of the central plan of a new socialist society and, nota bene, of the Revolutionary Party engineering the transition to planned society. Authority is here justified, as in Gramsci, by historical progress, and if the Soviet Union is not specifically mentioned, we can chalk this up to Horkheimer's caution in French and later American exile. Footnote 12. Text. Only the events between 1937 and 1940, the trials, the pact, the apparent convergence of many, though surely not all, Nazi and Soviet institutions and practices, and the dangers of the World War led to serious theoretical revisions in this context. Part 1 will focus on the political theoretical position, the revisions made possible, a many-sided theory of the liberal capitalist social formation and of its transition to politically interventionist formations. Liberal capitalism and the end of reason. It is well known that with the courageous exception of Walter Benjamin, who had an entirely different attitude to modernity, the members of the Frankfurt School had more than a modicum of theoretical nostalgia for aspects of the earlier liberal phase of capitalist development. The new was symbolized for them by the politics of fascism and the kitsch world of the culture industry. Page 9. But on one point they were emphatic. Since the earlier phase of capitalism was potentially or even inevitably the source of the later, all programs of return to liberalism would be bankrupt. Footnote 13. Text. First of all, the liberal capitalist economy led, though not smoothly and without rupture, to the economics of the present. Liberal capitalism was defined by the primacy of market and private property, relations freed of all political controls inherited from absolutism. The central institutional core of the system was the wage-labor-capital relationship. For all the Frankfurt theorists, translatable into the nexus of free labor and the owner-manager of capital. The purpose of the system is the accumulation of capital, which, regulated by the laws of competition, involves all of the economic crisis phenomena that Marx had worked out in Capital. The capitalist response to competition and crises is concentration, centralization and rationalization, Weber, in all spheres of life. These processes, however, imply the passing of liberal capitalism, and not only in the economic era. Most, so not all, Frankfurt theorists believe that the political system most in line with liberal laissez-faire capitalism was itself liberal in form, based on parliamentary representation and protection of individual liberties. Footnote 14. Text. They all knew, of course, that the liberal state was as strong as it had to be to reproduce the free movement of the economic parameters of the system. Footnote 15. Text, but they also believed that the period of monopoly capitalism makes plausible or even requires a qualitatively stronger and more active state, one that can directly intervene in the economy and act decisively against the real enemies of the capitalist system, including small-scale capital itself. The point is stressed over and over again by all critical theorists that the new economic and political systems of the 1930s represents the capitalist or state capitalist's response to the unavoidable and disruptive economic consequences of classical liberal capitalism. Footnote 16, text. We have said that all members of the Frankfurt School agreed that any attempt at return to liberalism is political bankruptcy. Nevertheless, and this has been the source of many a confusion, several members of the circle concentrated on those aspects of liberal capitalist society that they took to be increments of the processes of human emancipation, moments that are to be preserved or remembered for the sake of a liberated future. From a general socio-philosophical point of view, Max Horkheimer's End of Reason, 1940, the first article reproduced below, sums up the crucial argument, reviving a point from Marx himself. On the simultaneous birth and desubstantialization of individuality with the destruction of relation of personal bondage that characterized pre-bourgeoisie European society. Footnote 17, text. The new individuality, because defined by self-preservation, was victimized by a development that integrated individuals into more and more complex, mechanical, reified networks of relations, leaving finally now no self to be preserved. Page 10. But as long as market rationality in parliaments were not replaced by the manipulation of monopolistic competition and the terror of authoritarian states, the remnants of new individuality of the liberal era still embodied essential values of freedom, substantive reasons, and striving for happiness. So far, nothing new, nothing beyond Marx, the young Marx, at least, but Horkheimer went on to stress crucial parameters of individuality late capitalism came to threaten, parameters that Marxist social theory has either neglected or dealt with in a mechanically reductionist fashion. The reduction was not unlike the reduction that was to occur in authoritarian states, one of which could legitimate itself by suitable version of Marxist theories. Horkheimer himself, following Hegel, the Kierkegaard of either or, and his own 1936 study, stressed the bourgeoisie family as the birthplace and one of the last defenses of the last traces of substantial individuality. Not that he did not realize its many repressive and integrative functions, but he also saw another side. The relationship of mother and child and the sexual relationship before they are functionalized are the refuge of sensitivity in a society dominated by economic reason. The last intersubjective source of a personal substance in a world where subjectivity is defined in terms of egoistic self-preservation. None of this goes far beyond the 1936 essay, Authority and the Family, which we have subsumed under the first phase of the critical Marxist project. The claim that bourgeoisie individuality is definable socio-psychologically in terms of a family and juridically in terms of property relations was simply adapted from the earlier work. Nevertheless, the End of Reason, 1940, was the harbinger of a new position. The critique of the new abstract negation of liberal individuality was new to Horkheimer in 1940. The abstract negation of liberalism was understood in terms of a collectivism based on the massified, atomized fragments of the disintegrating family, and especially of the transcendence of